Anna has certain things in common with the protagonist of her novel, A Step from Heaven. Like the character Young Ju, Anna was born in Korea and moved with her family to the United States when she was very young. The author does include some real memories in the novel, but most of the character's experiences are fiction. The book earned praise when it was published in 2001. It was awarded the Michael L. Prince Award as the best book written for teens, based entirely on literary merit. Anna will speak on the University of Arkansas campus tomorrow, and she talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums from her home in Vermont last week. Critics and reviewers have commended the characters in her book for speaking and thinking as a child without the text ever becoming condescending or too precocious. In A Step from Heaven, that meant writing for a character that ages from 4 to 18 in fewer than 200 pages.
Internally, I struggled a lot with trying to portray a young child's voice with all the kind of complex nuances that children have. And I think one of the things that, you know, we assume that kids have just simple grammar or simple ideas or whatever it is. But the way that I wanted to approach portraying Young Ju as a child was to try to really be in her eyes. And I remember reading Angela's Ashes and being blown away, just struck by how wonderfully he was able to capture that young boy's voice, or his young, you know, inner child's voice. And one of the things that I realized was part of the view of looking from within, you know, at that age, is that you often misunderstand things, or your impressions of people or ideas or things, they have their own kind of, I don't know, magical quality or spin to it. And so I really tried to see her world from her eyes. You know, even just imagining her height, you know, the way that if you're small and you have to look up at people, you know, what are the things that you notice? Or language, acquiring language, you know, what are the kinds of sounds and syllables? What does a foreign language sound like to a young child?
Well, it's really interesting because in A Step from Heaven, you have her at one point wondering about the word going. And her friends say, so-and-so is going with someone. But she can't quite figure out the context.
Right. And I actually, that happened to me as a preteen. And kids, at that point, you know, were speaking about dating. And I had no idea what that word was. And so that really does come from my own experience of trying to figure out different cultural kind of idioms. And it's, you know, speaking Korean at home and speaking English at the school, there were a lot of gaps in my understanding. And that's, again, part of, you know, portraying accurately that kind of childhood wonder. Well, there's also a cultural wonder. You know, what is that about, this word going? Or what do people eat on Thanksgiving besides Korean food?
Well, and even, you know, I think just part of being a child, and the adult world always seemed so mysterious to me. I remember hearing the term changing hands. A business was changing hands. And you're somewhat afraid to ask, or you think maybe and so there's this whole other world, this adult world that you don't quite get and you wonder about, and you capture that magnificently.
Oh, thank you. It's amazing what kids create. When they don't, I think that's part of the charm, is when they don't understand and they don't necessarily ask you, they will create an entire definition and meaning that they, you know, they believe is true. And it's really, it's quite striking. I find that one of the most magical parts of childhood.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's a crossword puzzle that you have to fill in, so you do the best you can.
Exactly.
With the life experience you have.
Right.
A Step from Heaven is, I don't know, in the copy I have is 170 or so pages. It takes place over about 14 years, and yet it never feels rushed. It never feels like there are gaps. You do it with such an economy of words. I would think that would be harder to create an entire sort of character than using many words.
The beauty of those vignettes, or the form itself, I struggled again trying to find the right form to tell this story, and I really do feel like the story took on the form that it needed to, because vignettes inherently leave space for readers to imagine, and it's a poetic form, so there's a sense of depth, you know, in a short amount of time or space. And I also, you know, chose it very specifically because it felt like the way that my memories worked when I thought about growing up and immigrating from Korea to the United States. You know, we don't have our lives play out in an entire kind of, you know, one from beginning to end type of thing. What we do have are very episodic, very important, very visceral kinds of moments or smells or tastes or touch or, you know, some kind of visual. It's so I felt like the vignette form really captured the way that people remember their lives. And I wanted to be able to have readers not only identify with Youngju, but also feel as though they were living her life in some way, you know, taking on that first person really deeply and moving through her memories, basically having those memories with her as she was growing up.
One thing that Youngju is told before she goes to America and then shortly after is she can be anything she wants to be. And at one point she says maybe she'll be president, and she's laughed at. And it turns out they don't think you can be anything you want to be. So she finds out that being a girl is, and that's not the only time, but being a girl is different than being a boy.
Right, right, especially within her household. Yeah, it's definitely very clear cultural markers there. I mean, I think obviously there's gender inequality anywhere, but having grown up in a pretty patriarchal family and culture, it was something I was struck by when I was growing up. It was just known that, you know, sons were preferred in some ways. My parents would joke about having daughters and that they kept trying until they had a son. So it was just one of those things I felt always, you know. And I think the difference was made much more real because I was negotiating two cultures of being in the United States, but also feeling Korean when I was home. So having that marked difference of gender inequality was something that I really, not that I played that out, but I think it's just true to the culture, to the Korean culture at that time. I know a lot of it has changed, but I feel like there's still that kind of inherent understanding within Korean Americans and Koreans. Boys are definitely honored in a different way than women are.
You and Youngju share a sort of basic history. It's inevitable that some people, when they know that, will think that this is an autobiography. How do you deal with that?
Oh, yes. That is a question that I get quite often. I deal with it by saying it is and it isn't. I think with any form of writing, even memoir or nonfiction writing memoir, there's a certain element of fiction that just creeps in. And so though I started from a place of wanting to capture some of the memories that I had, the book soon kind of diverged from my own upbringing and my own path to Youngju's path and the character that she was in this book. And I tell people all the time she is a much braver, much wiser, much better person in so many ways, stronger, more noble. You know, the things that she struggled with in her family was so much greater, the adversities, compared to many of the things that I went through. I was well supported by my family. My father always believed, you know, I was going to go to college. Even though I was a girl, it was just assumed, you know, we are all going to college. There was a great deal of support for my writing when I decided to get my master's. So there were so many people in my life, my family, my community, that supported me in a way that Youngju never got. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things that I think I was very fortunate, but I also know that there are many stories out there where children, young women, girls, all struggling to get to that dream, and they don't have the same kinds of support systems that I did. So it's a hard question because often, you know, there are moments when you go into the book and you say, well, did that happen? And I can tell you, oh, yeah, that Coke thing,
the
bubbles in the nose, remember that so vividly.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I have that noted here because it's the first time a child who has never been, whose taste buds, I take it, have never been anything close to Coca-Cola. And it's such a vivid memory. It's so well described.
Oh, it's clearly etched in my memory. The first time I had Coke, it was completely baffling that anybody would want to drink this acid biting drink. And of course, you know, you burp and it goes right into your nose. And I just remembered tearing up, like, what is this? Yeah, up until that point, I had drank tea and water and milk, and that was about it. So carbonated drinks were something I avoided for a long time.
Well, and there's this thing that happens when you're a child that happens when you're describing it. It hurts. It's not pleasurable. And then one of the adults says, you know, go ahead and drink that, and you can have some more.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you're thinking is, I don't want any more.
Right. Very different perspectives from adults in childhood.
Of course, Youngju is born in Korea, comes to the United States, feels cultural differences. So every person who reads this is not reading it in the same way. But there is that universal sort of theme of otherness, of being secluded or not part of a group. And that speaks in this book. You don't have to be male, female, young. I think you get to the heart of that over and over.
I think alienation, shame, difference, all those themes that children, young people struggle with, feeling alone compared to their peers, you know, family life versus school or, you know, outside exterior life, those are all themes that I think a lot of children resonate with. And I definitely, in school visits and talks, have found that children really gravitate to the ideas because they have felt them, whether they're immigrants or not. They understand. You know, they might have felt ashamed of their parents at one point, or ashamed of some situation, or alone with their thoughts, you know, when everybody else was doing something else. And I think those are obviously childhood themes that anyone can relate to.
There's a vignette where Youngju has convinced her mother to spend a dollar on a lottery ticket. And she's convinced, pretty convinced, that there's a real good chance that their family will win the $23 million. And she counts down the clock. She can barely finish her dinner. And then she comes out and watches the television. And in a flash, the numbers are red. She only has one of the proper ones. And there is this sentence. She has this realization that a dollar for afternoon dreams is expensive and cheap. That is a wonderful sentence, and without over-romanticizing, without too many words, you've summed up one of those realizations you have when you're going from childhood to adulthood. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I definitely played the lottery and still play every once in a while for fun. And I do. It is really a moment for me to dream and to play. And my daughters and I, you know, get together and we pick out the numbers and we laugh and we talk about, well, what would you do? And it's one of those things that it's bittersweet that way, especially for Youngju. I see the more of the kind of playfulness of it now, but back then, and especially Youngju in her situation, it's so bittersweet. And that was the first vignette where I really started to understand what the story, how this story would shape up. So that's one of my favorite vignettes that I often read and that I come back to over and over again.
I would imagine many of your readers are younger than you and I are.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were writing A Step from Heaven, there are a couple of times when she and her brother reference cartoons or television shows that were on when I was young, when you were young.
Oh, you remember. That's wonderful.
You know, Wonder Twins activate.
Yes.
You just throw that in. And I'm curious, are you ever concerned that maybe a current 13 or 12-year-old may have no idea what that means?
You know, so here's the trick about writing, so you don't necessarily date yourself. You don't give too many examples. Like, you try to avoid words like iPod. I mean, nowadays it's just so, you know, it's ubiquitous. But in 10 years, it might not be the iPod. It might be,
right,
you know, something else. And so we try to, you know, we encourage, when I'm teaching writing, I talk about generalizing, you know, music player, whatever it is. Like, give it something a little bit generic or maybe a little bit different. Just spin the words a little bit. But some things like Wonder Twin Powers, you know, these are TV references that I know nobody except a certain generation of us will understand, but it still has that same resonance. Like, it's a cartoon, and this idea of Wonder Twins, you know, that could be now. It could be, you know, 20 years from now, 20 years past, whatever it is. I think it felt, at least when I was going through and revising and looking at all those kind of very specific cultural or generational markers, it felt, you know, generic enough, but at the time specific enough to just kind of throw in there.
What will you talk about when you're in Fayetteville at the University of Arkansas?
So I'm going to be talking about, the title of my talk is called The Power of One Voice. And it comes from this idea of, you know, obviously it's going to be Martin Luther King's birthday on Monday. And I wanted to just to touch upon a couple different kind of political issues that are running through my mind right now, but also historical issues and also personal, you know, personal power in terms of having the ability to affect change.
An Na is the author of several books, including A Step from Heaven, Wait for Me, and The Fold. She'll speak on the University of Arkansas campus tomorrow evening at 7 inside Giffel's Auditorium in Old Main. The talk, sponsored by the College of Education and Health Professions and the Brown Chair in English Literacy, is free and open to the public. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums last week.